From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right.
I'm Paseo del Norte Aventura.
That's my bad. I set up our engineer for that. Sorry, Jared. I didn't put the stop sign on after the imaging. But hey, good stuff. We're on the live radio. And actually, before we jump into a lot of content with our guests today, I want to bring you up to speed on some stuff. But stick around because Paul Gessing is in studio for the full hour with us from the Rio Grande Foundation. Last night, Andrew Stanley took the stage at Calvary Church, a comedian who's been heard on Sirius XM radio and selected as a new face of comedy at Montreal's prestigious Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. So hopefully you're able to get out and enjoy that. The week before that midweek service, we had the Christmas concert with Fernando Ortega, which we do so often with Fernando, a New Mexico native and a friend of the ministry. And thank both of them for coming in and really helping us have a good time and fellowship and celebrating as we head into the Christmas season. We're going to continue that next Wednesday night at Calvary Church. Dennis Agajanian is going to be here. He's often referred to as the world's fastest a flat-picking guitar player, and he's shared the stage with artists in the past like Johnny Cash, Michael W. Smith, and listen, his heart is for evangelism. Led him to join the worship team at several Billy Graham crusades, and he's a friend of that ministry, BGEA, as well as Calvary Church. If you want details about next Wednesday night, it's a free concert, essentially. I mean, it's during the service time, Wednesday night at 6:30. Details at calvarynm.church. And again, before we jump into today's content, want to make sure we remind you that KLYT, along with GFA World, is pressing on through the Christmas Critter campaign. You know, we'd like to raise $10,000 worth of gifts to send to those that are stricken with poverty in Asia and parts of Africa. And, of course, with the gift that's sent is the good news about Jesus. So if you haven't done it yet, take the time to go to klyt.fm, click on the home page. You'll see at the top of the banner or at the top of the page a banner for GFA World's Christmas Critter campaign, and then you can go shop digitally. Gifts anywhere from about 10 or 11 bucks up to thousands if you want to help build a church or put in a Jesus well, although you can provide clean water for a lot less than the cost of a well by providing bio sand filters. And there's just so much you can do. And you're changing lives with a lot of the gifts that you give. It creates a source of income as well as a resource for food. And you'll find out more by going to the website, klyt.fm. Click on that banner, and you can shop digitally, or you can call and talk to someone. Call toll-free, 855-513-2127. Here's that number again, 855-513-2127. I said our goal for the season is $10,000 worth of gifts. We're over 60% there, thanks to you and your generosity. So let's see if we can come around the bend and we're kind of between second and third base. Let's see if we can hit a home run on this one with GFA World and KLYT. All right. So in studio with us, Paul Gessing is here from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul has prepared a lot of good information. You'll find at Errors of Enchantment, the website. Paul, we're going to walk through a lot of that, but a belated happy Thanksgiving, Paul.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy early Christmas. We won't talk again until after the new year.
Did you get your share of tryptophan?
Yeah, I enjoyed my turkey, yes.
I had a little bit, actually. We did the restaurant thing with a couple of our grown kids. You know, the kids grow up, they kind of go and they got their own thing, and we... We went to the kind of a real nice gourmet restaurant, and I tell you, the best part for me, we had turkey, but the best part for me was it was a 4-course meal, and the first part was a real good smoked salmon with artisan bread.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice. So, Paul, lots to talk about. Other than turkey and Christmas.
We'll talk turkey here, though.
We'll talk turkey here. And one of the things we've talked about many times, Paul, is the surplus here in the state due to gas and oil. And, yeah, there's plenty of money in the state. But you've written in Heirs of Enchantment, which, by the way, it's heirsofenchantment.com if you want to go read some of these blog posts by Paul. New Mexico has plenty of money. Does it matter?
Well, the latest budget numbers are out, and the state of New Mexico, as we come up to the 2025 legislative session, hard to believe, we are just about in 2025, but just under $900 million in new money. Now, that is even, I think, lowball in terms of the real figure that we're talking about here, because the state will bring in $13.6 billion, billion with a B, from oil and gas alone. The state's general fund currently is at $10.2 billion. So really, the state of New Mexico takes in over $3 billion more from oil and gas alone than it does than it spends in its general fund. That's what the legislature annually meets and discusses. The real budget is much bigger because a lot of it is pass-through money coming from the federal government. But we bring in $13.6 billion a year, and the state general fund is about $10.2
billion. Well, so, and we've talked about it in the past. You know, there's plenty of things to fix in the state, yeah. And this extra money is being tucked away for a rainy day, and it's raining.
Right. That's the thing that kills me in terms of its, you know, kind of real-world impact on the policy is the legislature, the governor, have not seen fit to return money to the taxpayers, to we the people, to reduce taxes on businesses, to grow our state and grow its economy, or to diversify it so that should the oil and gas boom come to an end,
yeah,
that we'll be in better shape and more diversified with different businesses ready to take up the slack.
What's the answer when you go and you say, we've got a surplus, how come the taxes keep going up?
Oh, the legislators, at least a lot of them, the ones in control, the Democrats, they do not understand fundamental economics. They are very proud of the fact that they're putting so much money aside because they want the state to be able to rely on these invested dollars for the future. They think oil and gas is on its way out the door and that we're not going to have this kind of money in just a few years. So they don't really see the idea of diversifying our economy as a possibility with this money.
Well, they seem to like to have, yeah, and we'll get into it probably later with some of the other things we're talking about, but they like to have the, you know, free. And no, it's coming from these taxes, is it not?
It's coming from these taxes, from this oil and gas industry that supports so much of what happens in the state of New Mexico. And it's very frustrating. But the only way to change it is to really vote differently. And unfortunately, in November, the citizenry of the state kind of endorsed the way things have been going in New Mexico. If they'd risen up and said, we're going to throw the bums out, we're going to elect people who are going to take more of our money and give it back to us to diversify our economy, to bring growth to our state, they would probably be more inclined to do that kind of thing. Of course, we got this governor who's not going to do that. But
well, and speaking of the governor and how people voted, you know, here in this last general election, later in the hour, we're going to hear some audio from our governor, who, what, about 3 weeks ago was on MSNBC's Morning Joe. And we'll hear Joe take some time to ask her, you know, you're surrounded by these red states. How do you manage to keep New Mexico so blue?
Yeah, exactly.
And we're gonna hear a little bit of what she had to say, and which, by the way, we're going to play about a minute of it later in the hour. But take the time, go find it. I found it on YouTube, just did a search for, I don't know if I looked up MSG or Michelle Lujan
MLG.
MLG or, I got Chinese food when I, MLG. But you'll find it. Just do a search for New Mexico Governor MSNBC from about 3 weeks ago. You'll find it. Yep. Paul, another blog you recently wrote. This is something we've talked about in the past too, but very interesting to see the response from some of our legislators when they're, you know, when they're, it's brought to their attention about the shortage we have for medical providers, for doctors and, you know, medical professionals. I was a little dumbfounded by some of the responses from those that were made a, you know, I mean, they were probably already aware, but when it was brought to their attention, that's all I had to say. That's what I had to say, Paul. I was, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, so it is widely viewed, and I think accurately so, as a problem for the state of New Mexico that we do not have an adequate supply of medical professionals, not just doctors, but nurses, specialists, of course, within various medical fields. This came to a head in 2023, and several proposals were enacted, including revamping a recently passed medical malpractice bill that had really raised the price of insurance for medical professionals, for doctors that practice in New Mexico. But a lot of other things were addressed, but we still have a problem. And part of that problem is driven by the federal policies. Part of it is driven by state policies that exist. But I do hope, I'm not sure if we'll see any action, and that any action relating to the medical provider shortage is really going to be driven by voters contacting their legislators and the various medical professionals showing up in Santa Fe and saying, hey, we still have a problem in our state. We're still chasing medical providers out. Now, they were the legislature in 2023, so 2 years ago in the 60-day session, were kind of dragged kicking and screaming to address this problem, including by the governor, who I don't see eye to eye with on many, many issues, but specifically this one, the governor knew she had a problem and didn't want to be the governor when the last doctor left New Mexico. So what I'm about to read to you was written by the head of the New Mexico Medical Association. It appeared as a letter to the editor in the Santa Fe New Mexican. And it shows that there is a disconnect between most New Mexicans who really want this medical provider shortage to be addressed really quickly and thoroughly, and elected officials who are skeptical that there is a problem. So here it is. During a recent presentation to the Legislative Health and Human Services Committee, I presented innovative solutions to the physician shortage, ranging from the elimination of prior authorization requirements to the creation of a Medicaid trust to secure care for generations to come. Instead of exploring those solutions, State Rep. Eleanor Chavez demanded to know my personal salary and my practice's gross income. To make matters worse, when presented with data that New Mexico is the only state to have lost physicians in recent years, Rep. Liz Thompson proclaimed the data is propaganda. Patients can assure Thompson that the data is very real. The following day, Thompson questioned how much physicians spend on wine.
Yeah. What is that about? The salary and wine?
That is about New Mexico, what I believe we have a culture of jealousy. And I'm not saying every individual out there is jealous, but we are a deep blue state. It is a state that tends to be suspicious of wealth and economic prosperity. And we tend to elect people who think that other people who have made a solid income, even doctors and medical providers, that they've done it through corruption and taking advantage of their patients and the system, and that they really haven't earned that that income for themselves. I don't believe that to be an accurate statement, and I believe these legislators are not only ignorant, but they are showing their deeply misguided views of the way the economic system works and the healthcare system works.
It feels like not only have most of who is representing us in the roundhouse didn't get the memo on basic economics, they also didn't get the memo about this last election.
Well, maybe they got a different memo, because obviously the national election saw a broad rejection of, you know, economic leftism, cultural leftism, but it wound up in New Mexico that we not only embraced where things have been going in New Mexico, but kind of embraced the idea that we're going to continue down that path here in this state. So again, this falls to the voters, as everything tends to do, is that the voters need to decide, hey, do I want to be able to find a doctor? Not just here in Albuquerque, which this is relatively easy country to find doctors because of the population, but in Gallup, in Farmington, in Clayton, New Mexico, in Silver City, those folks do not have the medical providers available to them.
And to travel this far, you know, imagine having to go see your primary, you know, a couple hours away. It's just not, you know, it's something that needs to change. Hey, listen, for the full hour, Paul Gessing is our guest from the Rio Grande Foundation, riograndefoundation.org, and the blogs that we're mentioning to you, which, by the way, the heading for that last one is "Not All Policymakers Want to Address New Mexico's Medical Provider Shortage." You'll find these on the website, errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break later in the hour. As I mentioned, we've got a clip of our governor a few weeks ago on MSNBC. We're going to play you a portion of that and what she has to say about the state of child welfare in our state. We'll get to that and much more with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation after this on ABQ Connect. I do love the Christmas imaging. Gets us in the spirit of really celebrating the real reason for this season. And you know who's doing that is Christmas Joy. It's happening at the National Hispanic Cultural Center this weekend. And if you've never been to Christmas Joy, this is a professionally put together evening or afternoon, depending on which show you go to over the weekend. That's this weekend, December 14th and 15th at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. It's really a moving, uplifting, and it's an award-winning production celebrating the true spirit of Christmas. They also do a great production at Easter time, too. Of course, when that comes around, we'll let you know. But the showtimes at the National Hispanic Cultural Center this weekend are Saturday at 2 p.m., and 6:30 p.m., and then Sunday at 2 p.m. The details are on the web. Go to nccnm.org. That's nccnm.org. Christmas Joy this weekend at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. Spending the full hour today on ABQ Connect with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, thanks so much for the time you take and the effort you put into not only preparing for this show, but throughout the month, you know, keeping us up to date at errorsofenchantment.com. Is that right, .com?
Errorsofenchantment.com, yeah. Yes.
Thanks for doing that.
You're welcome. It is what we do at the Rio Grande Foundation, and I always appreciate the opportunity to share our perspective and information with your audience.
And by the way, Rio Grande Foundation is a not-for-profit organization, and riograndefoundation.org. If at the end of the year you appreciate Paul as much as we do, there's a place for you to go and support what they're doing financially. Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Rio Grande Foundation at Heirs of Enchantment, you do a lot of things, but if one thing is primary, the message I get is really acting as a barometer and holding accountable those that that would have an impact on our economic freedom here in New Mexico.
That is indeed the primary objective of our organization. We talk about liberty, opportunity, and prosperity, but functionally speaking, the single biggest broad issue that we work on is empowering individuals here in New Mexico to embrace their freedoms economically, obviously, as long as they're respectful of other people's choices, the laws at hand, and individual flourishing. But yes, economic freedom, the ability to engage in voluntary economic engagement with other people that respect human dignity. Those are the policies that we support and engage in.
Now, with that in mind, so how is that Economic Freedom of North America Index as far as its report on the condition in New Mexico?
Yeah, so this is an annual report, and unlike some reports that I share with you, Steve, this one, I actually engage with the people who draft the report every single year, the folks that primarily do the heavy lifting are at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, and I fly off to Dallas once a year to help them bring more information to bear and refine their information to make it more accurate, to make the work more appealing and informational to the media and to average citizens who might want to use this information. But first and foremost, economic freedom as it pertains to this report simply means the ability for individuals to use their financial resources and attain their wealth and prosperity through that voluntary action. Fundamentally, the variables are taxation, low tax rates being better than high tax rates, government spending, low government spending being superior to high government spending, and then regulation. Obviously, some regulations are necessary, but more regulations in our modern society tend to be more harmful, to place unnecessary restrictions on individual behavior. Lighter, better regulation tends to promote human flourishing and prosperity. So this Economic Freedom of North America Index is published by a Canadian think tank called the Fraser Institute, F-R-A-S-E-R Institute, with the help of folks at Southern Methodist University. And we in New Mexico dropped two places from 45th to 47th in the most recent 2024 edition. Again, you can find this all at heirsofenchantment.com. Other states that perform poorly, California and Hawaii, along with New York, are the very worst performers. Our neighboring states of Texas and Oklahoma are some of the best performers, while Colorado, Utah, and Arizona are kind of in the middle of the pack in this report. But ultimately, New Mexico, like we talked about earlier, with the tax burden and the oil and gas revenue, we have a real chance to improve our economic freedom thanks to this money that's available to the policymakers. And if they chose, they could implement policies that would benefit our state and make us all more economically free and
prosperous. We have a chance because the surplus is there, and things aren't getting fixed. And I'll just, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I know we just finished a general election. There's going to be a midterm coming up, and there's plenty of elections in the, in the midst of that. We would encourage you to be, Paul and I, I'm sure each time we come up on an election, we'll try to remind you that more than once every 4 years, we should be out. And these local elections are going to have more of an impact on you in this area than probably any general election. Is that fair to say, Paul?
I would say that the single most impactful elections in New Mexico are the legislative elections, even above and beyond the presidency and Congress. The legislature makes the laws and the rules that we all live under. The governor, of course, is a big part of that. That happens in a different year, 2 years from now. But having a mayor on issues more along the lines of crime, that's the important issue that I think we all want to see our mayoral candidates and elected mayors engage in more effectively. So that'll be coming up this coming November. We don't know the contours of that race yet. I'm sure that probably once we get past the holidays, maybe they'll wait until after the legislative session, but I think a lot depends on just who's making up their minds and who's being encouraged or discouraged from running for mayor. We know that Mayor Keller is seeking a third term. If it's good enough for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, it's good enough for Mayor Keller. By that, I mean that the U.S. presidency is limited to 2 4-year terms, meaning 8 years in total. Mayor Keller is looking for an additional 4 years beyond that. He will have served 8 years in office by this time next year. And he thinks he deserves yet another 4 years in office, despite, I think it's safe to say, some very serious problems that we're all concerned about across the political spectrum in this city. But we will hopefully know some more in January when we sit down, but it may not be until we get beyond the legislative session.
Okay, so I mentioned earlier in today's show those free programs that are funded either by increasing taxes or the surplus from oil and gas, one of them being college here in New Mexico. Paul, how's that going?
Well, I never thought free college was a particularly wise thing to use taxpayer dollars on. But I think I found a chart from the New Mexico Department of Finance and Administration, and again, you can find the links on heirsofenchantment.com. Quite a bit of engagement, by the way, with this post on social media. So if you look at graduation rates at our, going to start with 4-year colleges and universities, so we're talking about 6 years, giving students 6 years to graduate from a college or university. Surprisingly, New Mexico Tech leads the pack at 55%. I look at New Mexico Tech and say, wow, that's a challenging academically school, very scientifically oriented.
I would expect the top students to be there.
That's true as well. At some point, the material can be challenging to the point where you might not be able to accomplish it all. But New Mexico Tech has the highest 6-year graduation rate, followed by New Mexico State at 50%, UNM at 49%. Okay, so those are three of the major schools. I think Tech is honestly the school of most academic rigor and challenge. But then you get into Eastern New Mexico, 6-year graduation rate, 34%. Highlands, 27%. Northern New Mexico, 20%.
Where's Northern New Mexico?
Espanola.
Oh, okay.
And Western New Mexico in Silver City, 24%. So you are over a 6-year period resulting in 1 out of 5 of your students graduating with a 4-year diploma. I think that is an indicator that maybe we're not getting our money for a college diploma, especially because when you're attending one of these universities, these are the, like I said, the flagships. These are the ones that you really only go to if you're planning on achieving a degree from one of these schools, and some really dismal numbers there with the free college. Now, you get into community colleges, and their rates are even lower. Of course, community colleges, I think of as a place where you can often find people getting credits that they've missed along the way, doing remedial education, et cetera. But yeah, a lot of very low three-year graduation rates for community colleges, which of course tend to be two-year institutions. And then the number has plummeted too, in terms of the number of students graduating has declined rather markedly from 2013 to current times, even though there's been a recent uptick, thanks in part to the free college. Again, that's one aspect of the issue. We've raised concerns, and we've talked about before how many of these young people are staying in the state and putting their degrees to work and paying taxes to New Mexico again. What are these young people who graduate or don't graduate doing, and how worthwhile was what they learned in the time that they spent in the classroom while not actually getting a degree and anything that actually marks them as having achieved higher learning than what they had before, and yet we're paying for that as taxpayers. So I think there's a lot of concerns. This is just another topic of concern when it comes to the free college issue.
All right, listen, full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We're going to take a break and come back, and a couple of places on the errors of enchantment where our governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, is making headlines, including potentially the fact that, you know, in the near future, if you want an RV, you may have to go out of state to go buy one. We'll cover that and her time on MSNBC a few weeks ago, right after the break on ABQ Connect. All right. Thanks for tuning in to ABQ Connect and pressing on with our conversation with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation. RioGrandeFoundation.org is the website. And then you can also, of course, go to errorsofenchantment.com to find these blog posts that we've been covering today. And as we went to the break, I mentioned that our governor making headlines on errors of enchantment. Paul, are you an RV owner?
I am not an RV owner. It seems like something that might be fun to have someday, either an RV or a camper. They are two different things. Just to be clear, people may not understand that an RV is a recreational vehicle. That's what it stands for.
It's got a motor in it.
It's got a motor in it. Yes, that's the big difference.
And is that something we may see coming down the pike? I mean, is that something that California's already done? And is this just another area where our state leadership is falling in line?
Well, the idea is that last year about this time, we were kind of expressing our frustration and outrage that a unelected body, the Environmental Improvement Board, put there by the governor, had passed a mandate that will force electric vehicles onto New Mexicans via the car lots where we buy our cars. If you go to a car lot in New Mexico, starting summer of 2026, 43% of the vehicles sold will have to be electric vehicles due to that regulation that was passed last year. Now, I thought about it at the time, and I thought, you know, this is really bad. We fought really hard to push back, but of course we were overwhelmed because the governor had her people on that board and rammed it through. Then I saw reports just recently from people in the RV industry, and specifically RVtravel.com, who said, California, this is a headline from November 7th, 2024, the RVtravel.com, it's an industry publication. California, other states may soon ban motorhome sales. And I thought to myself, huh, that's interesting, because California is kind of the guidepost for New Mexico when it comes to bad policy. And specifically, the attempt to limit your vehicle choices when it comes to whether you buy a traditional internal combustion engine or a EV. Well, the publication to summarize, went on to note that there is no such thing as an EVRV or electric recreational vehicle. They all have internal combustion engines. Therefore, unless somebody comes up with a creative way to avoid the 43% mandate, there's no way to sell a RV legally in California starting in January, this year, this coming year. So in a matter
of 2 weeks,
RVs will be, the sale of them will be banned in California. New ones, of course. New Mexico, we've got a couple years. So the good news is we get to watch and see how California, Oregon, Washington, a couple of other states that have been the first, you know.
Yeah, there's a few beautiful national parks in California.
A bunch, and all the areas around the West Coast, Oregon and Washington as well. So that is going to be very interesting to see unfold how that works. However, on the flip side, because New Mexico was not, fortunately, a first adopter, an early adopter of this bad policy out of California, President Trump will take office in January as well. He may not be able to save California's RV industry because, you know, even if Trump like signs an executive order on day one saying California is no longer able to do these things by themselves, they have to adhere to the federal rules as we've written them out with regard to emissions and whatnot, it could be a problem for the industry. But even if he does that on day one, which I hope he does, we don't know if he'll do it, though, then New Mexico will be safe. If he does not do that, or he says maybe Trump decides, well, all these blue states enacted this bad policy, none of them supported him in the election, and he just says, well, let them reap what they sow. Let them react to the bad policies that they have enacted.
And continue to move to Texas.
That will cause some fundamental population shifts and some real economic problems, because I don't know how much RV purchasers pay in the form of taxes, but they employ New Mexicans. They are businesses that sell illegal products, and undoubtedly hundreds and maybe thousands of people work in those industries. You certainly see them advertising on the local news quite a bit. That could go away with this already on the books regulation that was passed by an unelected board.
Maybe in California and other states that decide not to make it legal to sell them, maybe they'll just build them there.
I don't think they build many RVs in California. I don't know where they build RVs. Yeah. That's an excellent question. I have a suspicion that it's probably not California.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And on that same note, with our Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, I mentioned earlier in the show her appearance on MSNBC on Morning Joe. It was about 3 weeks ago, and she talked about a lot of things, and actually I'd encourage you to go find that on YouTube. I went and found it, but said a lot of things, and we're going to get to one that you wanted to aim in on, Paul, but one of the things she did say was that well, actually, let's play the clip. She may say it in this clip, but it starts with Joe. I forget what's Joe's last name.
Scarborough.
Yeah, Scarborough. It starts with him basically saying, you know, you're surrounded by red states. That, you know, clearly after this election, you're surrounded. But how does New Mexico manage to stay so blue? And this is about a 1 minute clip. Let's go ahead and play that clip.
Why is New Mexico now blue when it's moved blue when so much of the country has moved red?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One, New Mexico is a state that is clearly not interested in extreme positions. And the Republican Party today isn't moderate, isn't focused on the middle, isn't focused on working class Americans, even if folks voted assuming that they would support that agenda. New Mexicans know in this day and age, that's not the case. Democrats in New Mexico, including me, are delivering in that regard. So free child care, investments in affordable housing, free college, so much investments in raising wages and opportunities that now New Mexico, because of those investments, went from 50th in child poverty to 17th. So really clearly demonstrating we know how to make a difference in family stability and opportunity.
Okay, let me say this, Paul, before you jump in.
Sure.
Clearly, the New Mexico voter in hook, line, and sinker, man. and at the beginning of this, when I heard, you know, the New Mexicans not interested in extreme positions, well, no, clearly they are. If they've continued to keep it a blue state where the progressive party, the progressive portion of a political party is clearly in power.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. And later on, she's asked about education, and it's kind of like asking an arsonist about how to save buildings from fires. Because when you talk about New Mexico's education outcomes, we're dead last in the entire country, and this governor has been a big part of getting us to that point. But I want to hone in on one specific point that she makes, and she claims that New Mexico went from ranking 50th in child poverty to ranking 17th in child poverty. Now, set aside the bald-faced lie that this is, and ask yourself, if you are Joe Scarborough or, of course, Mika Brzezinski, who's his co-host there, and a politician comes on and tells you that their state improved that dramatically.
The former press secretary was sitting right there.
Yeah. If you improve that dramatically, what should your first question be? Well, my question would be, how'd you do it? Because that is groundbreaking information. You're talking a massive, massive improvement in child poverty. Well, nobody asked that question. You could play it further. You don't have to. It's I wouldn't recommend it, but nobody asked that question. Well, if you ask that question and you ask it to somebody who knows, they will tell you, as I will tell you now, that New Mexico made no such improvement. We didn't move one iota. What the governor is doing is conflating or lying. We'll just go with lying.
Spinning.
Spinning would be a nice way to put it. She is conflating two different measurements that the U.S. Census Bureau has. One is the traditional poverty measure, which New Mexico comes in 50th in. The second is the supplemental poverty measure, which includes a vast array of government programs, and New Mexico comes in 17th. That does not mean that real poverty has improved in New Mexico. It's just a different way of looking at the numbers. We could argue which one is better or worse, but it is worth noting that New Mexico Voices for Children and the Annie E. Casey Foundation have New Mexico ranked 50th in terms of our child outcomes. Our education system is, as you said earlier, 51st or 52nd, depending on which measurement you look at. There is no realistic measurement that we have of child outcomes in the state of New Mexico that puts us anywhere near 17th overall. So I would go with the first and original poverty measure, which has us at 50th, because I think that's the more realistic number. But it is incredibly sneaky how she is playing on, frankly, the ignorance and the complicit of the media to lie to New Mexicans and the public at large.
All right. And Paul, okay, hold on to your hat. She said something I agreed with. Not there, not in the quote.
Fair enough.
And I quote, local elected leaders have a huge role to play in reinvesting in your family, security, stability, and quality of life.
That is true.
That is true. How are they doing? How's their report card? And that's for you, the listener, to decide. And that's for you to respond to when we get to the polls the next time anyone in the roundhouse is up for election. So keep that in mind. But I did agree with her. I agreed with that statement. Hey, listen, a full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. And you'll find these blogs that we're talking about on the website at errorsofenchantment.com. And we're going to come back and talk more with Paul as we wrap up the hour on ABQ Connect next. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect, full hour today with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org, and the blogs that we're covering today are found at errorsofenchantment.com, written by Paul. You know, one of the things we've talked about in the past, Paul, was economic development, and part of that being companies like Maxeon. You know, there was a thought that they would be building down in Mesa del Sol, but it looks like not only has the location changed, but the amount of investment in New Mexico has greatly changed as well.
Yeah, and just to put a little more context here, so Maxeon is a Singapore-based, largely Chinese-owned solar panel manufacturing company that the governor had really touted as a big deal for economic development in the city of Albuquerque and the state of New Mexico. Their plan originally was to build a brand new 1.9 million square foot, so nearly 2 million square foot manufacturing facility at Mesa del Sol. But the problem is, as we have talked about, Maxeon's finances are very shaky. They have seen a great deal of turnover and change at the company. And of course, looking forward, you have to think, well, gee, President Trump may not be as friendly towards the solar subsidies and the solar industry as the Biden administration. Well, they had said they were going to break ground by the fourth quarter of 2024, and this story came out around Thanksgiving, and it was basically one of those things where Maxeon Solar said, yeah, we're not really going to do what we had said we are going to do. Instead of a brand new 1.9 million square foot facility, they are going to take over a vacant Honeywell facility that is 110,000 square foot. So about a 95% drop in their square footage.
Yeah.
And, they are hoping to, you know, get that facility up and running sometime in 2025. But Maxeon still has serious problems. They're losing money hand over fist. And I still believe that this company may never move any of their operations to the land of enchantment. And an unfortunate problem that politicians don't have our best interest in mind. Yes, we can argue whether company X or company Y benefits New Mexicans at large, but if they're doing business without government subsidy, they are bringing jobs and money into our city and our state. Maxeon is taking money if they get this thing up and running. And I think it's a short-term operation.
Are they going to get all those same incentives they had?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. And with just a couple minutes that we have, Paul, if that, another article I wanted you to be able to comment on was what you had to say about the New Mexico's decline in public school enrollment. And our state's not the only one.
No, but the National Center for Education Statistics has data showing that There's going to be a rather steep decline in a lot of states, including New Mexico, in the number of students enrolled in public schools. Now, we could say, well, that's good because they're moving to private schools or homeschool, and there's some of those. Obviously, the number of babies born is an issue as well, and so that's a less optimistic thing, and people leaving the state is not a good thing, but New Mexico is going to see, if this data holds true, by 2031, a further 15% decline in the number of students in public school throughout the state. And that is going to be a real challenge for us. Obviously, the education budgets and how much spending we do and whether we are in a teacher shortage is an issue. Where our workforce for the future comes from and the people who are supposed to pay the taxes, that's another question. But this is a real challenge and real problem, and New Mexico is right behind Hawaii and California as the states that are losing the most kids in their school system. And, you know, again, we'll be tracking this, watching it, and of course, watching whether APS responds and closes schools as they should because of the decline in student population, whether education budgets continue to grow because, hey, we have the money, or whether there's a real effort to right-size as well as improve New Mexico's education system.
Yeah, we need to fix the broken machine. I mean, we're spending more per student than many states that are spending less and having better outcome as far as scores on education. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with that in the coming years. Paul, the next time we get together in January, we'll be in session.
Yeah, well, it'll be Happy New Year. Actually, we won't be in session yet. The session starts on the 21st of January.
We'll be heading into session.
We will be able to really dissect what we expect to see in the session next time we talk.
Well, Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation, go to riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, thanks for your time. Look forward to next month.
Thank you.